The following podcast is intended for a mature audience. This episode contains brief depictions of abuse to a minor. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome, dear listener, to Echoes of Escheaton, a solo play DeGenesis podcast that lets the dice rolls tell the story. You'll find the gripping narratives in this apocalyptic setting unfold before your very ears. You'll hear stories of loss and injustice, redemption and hope. A miasma of gloom drifts across the barren wastes, while nightmarish beasts roam and terrorize cities and settlements. Only mankind's inexhaustible will to survive offers the faintest glimmer of hope on the horizon. The echoing shades of the bygone peoples lingers on the wind and on the lips of survivors in this hell on earth. What stories will they tell? Kiefer leapt up from the sand, pelting Etta's coat with grainy dirt. The amplified wailing continued, and he shielded his ears from the intense screeching with the flat of his palms. He dashed across to Sudo as she was thrashing on the ground. Trickles of blood stained the bronze earth with a burgundy patina around her head. Her arm was clutched closely to her chest, covering her source module power bank. Kiefer didn't dare remove his hands from his ears. He'd seen plenty of chronicler aggressors get their eardrums and eye sockets blown out from the frequencies of a simple vocoder, let alone the more powerful Cascader. The Famulancer wedged a foot between her arms and pried them away from her torso as she screamed. The shouting and writhing continued, but he was able to see the sheen of the vocoder amp swinging loosely around her chest. He gave it a swift kick, the reinforced leather and steel toe of his boot cracking the amperage display and causing sparks and a puff of ozone to fill the air for a brief moment. All that was left to break the deafening silence were the whimpers of Sudo. Etta removed her hands from her head. Her lips parted to call out to her fellow travelers, and she realized her jaw and tongue were incredibly sore. It ached every time she moved her mouth. She quickly removed a glove to swipe a finger inside her gums. Blood and saliva were shining at the tip of her finger. She'd bitten a small hole in her tongue with one of her incisors from clenching her jaw so tightly during the sound wave attack. She winced at the pain in her mouth, but was otherwise unharmed. She could see Kiefer crouched over Sudo, speaking to her gently and calming her like one would a scared animal. An animal. Etta came to her senses.
Piotra,
she gasped. The horse lay facing away from her, but within arm's reach. Petra's legs were tucked up under his belly from being forced down by Kiefer's stranglehold. He was breathing raggedly. Etta scooted across the sands on her knees and stuck out calloused fingers to rub the coarse fur across Petra's broad shoulders.
Easy, boy. It's me, Etta.
Her fingertips touched the bristly fur, and the horse started, neighing loudly. Petra shot to his feet, still facing the opposite direction of Etta, as she tried her best to grab his reins from behind.
Steady on. Ho, Piotra, ho!
She yelled, pain radiating across her mouth and jawline. But the beast wouldn't obey and started bucking.
Etta, control that damned horse before he runs away with the medical equipment or tramples someone.
Kiefer barked. Etta scrambled in front of Petra's crazed movement to make sure he saw her. He reared on his hind legs, and the judge narrowly dodged under hoof. She held up both her hands to grab the reins this time. Petra brought his muzzle and front legs down when he saw the wide-brimmed hat and scar across his master's face, a face of love and nurturing.
There you are. You're always an obedient boy, even in the noisy crowd at the forecourt. What's a little more yelling got to do with you misbehaving?
But Petra still seemed distracted and was fussy, shaking his mane. Etta could feel something wasn't right. She saved a command word for when Petra truly got out of order. Rowdiness seldom occurred for the trained gate horse, but she was glad to have memorized at least one as part of her equine training in the judiciary.
"Pace, Piotr, pace,"
she whispered into his ear. He ignored her again with another nervous whinny and glances from his big brown eyes deflated Etta. No way he would have ignored this willingly. Fuzzy ears flicked haphazardly in the air. Petra had gone deaf. Meanwhile, Kiefer had set to work examining Sudo. She withdrew her arm every time Kiefer tried to take her wrist, so he tried a different approach. He gently placed his hands on either side of her temple, the plastic and rubber wrinkling underneath his grip.
"Sudo, your vocoder and radio connect has been severed for the moment. You will need to verbally or physically affirm or disaffirm. If you hear me and understand, affirm."
"Yes."
"Good job, Sudo. Do you have pain in any other limb, your hips, or lumbar spine?"
"No."
"Okay, I am going to remove your mask so I can
No!
Sudo yelled, and instinctually raised her uninjured arm to swat at Kiefer. He grabbed her wrist as she swung, his thick, worn fingers wrapping around the entire width of her wrist, and then some.
"My bedside manner absolutely has a limit,"
he snarled. Sudo tried to free her arm but couldn't move an inch. It was like trying to remove something from a steel vice clamp.
"I will do my best to aid you, but you have to help me,"
he said, an air of calm returning to his voice. The tautness in Sudo's forearm relaxed, and Kiefer's grip on it loosened as well. It was laid back down by the chronicler's side, still. With his two free hands, Kiefer ran his fingers under Sudo's chin and found the twin clasps that unhooked the mask to her cowl and unsnapped them. Supple rubber and acrylic bent and stretched under his grasp as he pulled the mask over the face of a young, short-haired girl. Her soft cheeks were stained with tears, and hazel eyes were bloodshot and puffy with pain and panic. The same rough paw that threatened to snap her wrist a few seconds ago was placed caringly on her shoulder. Kiefer patted it gently. He cradled her head and turned it sideways, looking for any other damage as he spoke.
"Take deep breaths and let me know if you feel pain anywhere else. I'm going to fetch my shears and trauma kit. Can you wait patiently?"
"Yes."
"Good, Sudo. Patience shows true know-how."
Sudo swallowed hard. It was a difficult day to be patient. The aluminum trunk was tipped over in the sand from the gale, and Kiefer righted it with the help of Etta. The hinges squeaked from the sand filling their grooves, but the two halves swung freely open, propped apart by the small mounds of dirt kicked up at Kiefer's feet. Various bottles, bandages, and tools were stacked neatly on the shelves in Kiefer's eyeline. He picked up a pair of angled scissors, two glass jars with a clear and amber liquid inside, and a small length of rounded wood, about as long as Sudo's arm from the elbow to the wrist.
"Are you going to need to amputate?"
Etta asked, feeling a bit queasy.
"Not at all. FRX transverse traumatic fracture can lead to hematoma and swelling that would pinch nerves and necrotize surrounding tissue. A splint cast should alleviate subdermal pressure and promote ossuary healing."
The judge wrinkled her lips and scratched her head.
"Hold Sudo's other side down. Sudo, drink this,"
Kiefer said sternly as he put the jar of amber liquid up to her lips.
"What is that?"
"Field anesthetic. You will need it. Trust me."
The thick vapors from the jar made Sudo's eyes water even more. She thought it smelled familiar, like the dirty, orgiastic packs toasting their bottles of distillate in cross-quarter public houses. She put her lips on the rim of the bottle slowly, but Kiefer quickly lifted the bottle up, causing her to swallow two big, burning gulps. He pinched her nose shut and held her mouth closed to keep her from gagging it back up.
"Sorry for the surprise,"
he said sheepishly. Sudo's entire sinus cavity burned, and it felt like her throat was even hotter from the medicine than the parched air around her.
"Bastard! Your plan was to poison me and leave me to die!"
Sudo scrunched her eyebrows, then hiccuped again. She could see two sets of Kiefer and Etta to despise for their treachery, but she was finding it harder and harder to focus or care. Her vision faded, then went black. Kiefer washed his hands with the clear liquid from the other bottle and cut through Sudo's chronicler suit sleeve. He determines the extent of the damage of her mangled limb bent in two places. It's a broken forearm. Kiefer makes a medicine roll to try and set the bone, and he will receive a one dice bonus for subduing Sudo earlier with some pretty powerful alcoholic distillate pulled straight from an Anabaptist high-proof cask. He's also using a splint to hold her arm. Splints provide support to prevent the reopening complication outlined in the artifact's rulebook. His dice pool, 7 dice. Difficulty, 2 successes. With a twist and crack, the arm takes on its original shape. Sudo took 2 points of trauma damage in this fiasco, meaning it will take 20 days total for her broken arm to fully heal. More rules about recovery on page 118 in the Catharsis Rulebook. Tent poles lean together in the sand and were lashed together at the top with loose cord. Etta's leather coat was spread wide across the top of the joist to provide a little shade for Kiefer to work and for Sudo to continue resting as the Borkan sun beat down upon their faces. Kiefer was wrapping a sling and splint around the passed out girl's arm. Etta held her back up so Kiefer could make one last pass around her bare shoulder with the clean, white cloth.
"Will she heal all right?"
Etta asked, tucking stray bits of gauze under Sudo's arm.
"Yes. Her pulse is steady, and there was no open fracture. Plus, she is young. Youth heals quickly."
"Yeah, about that. She seems too young to be traveling the wilderness. What the hell are the Chroniclers doing sending children to do their tasks hundreds of kilometers away?"
"Perhaps she volunteered?"
Two adults stared down at the young Chronicler, disheveled chestnut hair and silver-capped teeth gleaming in the harsh rays as she snored softly in a drunken stupor.
What is Slay the Stars? Oh. Come with us and enjoy a chaotic D&D hot pot, a dash of cosmic fantasy, a few cloves of dark fairy tales, and that's the entire bottle of shenaniganery. Oh dear. Oh no. Listen in Tuesdays at noon Eastern Standard Time on any major streaming platform. SlayTheStars.com. Persomnia ad astra.
All right, buckle up, kids. It's time for another Overland travel segment. I'll roll a single D6 against a weather and wandering encounter table I've made. Weather is rolled every day, and encounters every 3 days. Here we go. The party will camp here for the day, using another day's rations for no progress but to let Sudo recover. Etta is bitter about Petra, but says nothing to Sudo. Day 8. Resources, 22. A dust storm kicks up at the base of some taller foothills and makes sticking to the coordinates in the map difficult for the party. They get a bit disoriented in the blinding winds and only make 10 kilometers of travel for the day. Day 9. Resources, 21. Rolling valleys and rising bluffs give the party a bit of a buffer from the wind and some shade as they travel. They make up for lost time from yesterday by walking an additional 5 kilometers. Day 10. Resources, 20. Good weather continues for the group, and even Sudo finds a small wellspring of courage despite her broken arm, and they complete an additional 5 kilometers. A drying marshland stretches out for roughly a kilometer as they exit the valley. Dank smells waft across their noses on the breeze, but even more distracting is the bits of stone and wood strewn about in the muck. These are telltale signs of a former settlement, or at least a few dwellings built out of sight of travelers or raiding clans who would seldom take this wilderness route. After traveling a bit further, the group discovers a stacked stone foundation of shale several meters past plumes of tall spiked grass. Kiefer stands guard and Sudo and Etta take a closer look. But neither of them roll high enough to discover a slab door set into the ground and disguised as part of the stone floor. Kiefer just shrugs at their lack of findings, and they all continue on. Day 11, resources 19. Whoa, I've rolled a 4 on my weather and encounter table the past 4 days. They're really lucking out with this overland travel. But I suppose I have to take the small wins where I can. Death a thousandfold always awaits around the corner. Besides, it's perfect timing for a change of scenery. The oppressive heat of the Black Lung gives way to warming light and cooler air on the three travelers' backs as they make their way southward, leaving behind the dry, barren desert and flat plains. Passing one last small bluff, a stunning vista makes the party freeze on top of an overlook. Snow-capped peaks crested the blue-gray sky ahead and spanned the breadth of their gaze even from several hundred kilometers away. The alpine tundra lay spread out beneath them, providing a shocking display of yellows, purples, and greens that assaulted the senses.
Astonishing! Iced ground?
Wait till those blowhard protectors hear about this back of the Garamond in the quarter. That old fogey Adalia will be the one buying me drinks this time.
Etta nudged Sudo's shoulder opposite her sling.
Worth breaking something for the view alone, eh?
Hardly. But this view is impossible to codify. Only a mimetic wall could replicate this in high enough quality. Make no mistake.
Sudo replied, taking in the sight.
Well, well, I'll take that as a... It's too beautiful for words, Etta.
The air grew even slightly cooler as they descended into the scattered shrub and vegetation in the tundra below. The ground beneath their feet changed as well, from the parched and cracked earth to patchy soil with flowers and jagged rocks, eventually slowing their pace as they picked their way through the rough terrain. Day 12. Resources 17. As they traverse, the party encounters a small, winding stream that cuts through the path, rushing over moss-covered rocks and trickling down into shallow, clear pools. Uneasy terrain and another hot day uses a full day's worth of resources, especially as Etta and Kiefer had to help Sudo and Petra stay steady over the crags and gaps underfoot. Day 13. Resources 15. Cutting winds swipe through the sparse trees and foliage and threaten to take the party and their gear over the side of crags or bash them against larger boulders. They decide to hunker down, nestle between two gigantic rocks to wait out the strong mounting gusts coming from the titanic alpine region. It was a rather sleepless night, as the canvas tent material and cramped conditions between the boulders made everyone sleep in tighter quarters than usual. Kiefer and Etta were adrift deeper into sleep, physically exhausted from helping the handicapped horse and Sudo. Though the chronicler kept taking sips of the distillate to dull the pain, it only took a slight edge off of her aches. Cold sweats and pained grunting kept her in the limbo of consciousness as a different kind of pain took over. Pain from an old wound, deeper set than even her bones, and the stuff of nightmares clouded her mind as she dozed off. An open palm slapped across a cheek. It was a girl. She was 11 years old.
Abigail, straighten up, you little quim. This judge asked you a question.
The girl's cheek burned. She ran her tongue over her chipped teeth from falling. No. From being pushed downstairs. She could taste the shit stains in the air. She could smell oil and perfume. She was nervous. Skid Road and East Side Justition will make you nervous. End of the line. She counted the shoelace loops, the stitches in a pant leg, and cracks in the plaster on her wall in less than a few seconds. She could draw maps from memory. They looked like black spiderwebs on paper. People looked at her strangely. She hated it. Another slap. Metal rings scraped her lips. Tilda, the Skid Road housing mistress.
Abby, I swear by all, I'll rough you up and feed you to the cockroaches in the desert if you get another mark for thieving.
She was 12 years old. Her teeth ached all the time, rotting in her skull. She distracted herself by sneaking away to read in candlelight with
Redacted. Religion is the opioid of the masses. The stream encompasses all.
A punch to her nose. She was 13 years old, but Tilda was getting weaker with age. Probably too much huffing and inhaling.
Redacted. Optimization begins with a clear mind. Illicit substances weaken the apparatus.
Get bent, you haggard bitch. You couldn't break wind with your old wrinkly hands.
She felt good saying it. It made the busted nose hurt less. Tilda hated being called old and haggard, worse than being called a bitch. It was worth the next punch, a parting gift.
Take her out of my sight. She's more trouble than she's worth and deserves to die in a cleft.
Tilda scoffs to the figures in the room. They've come to take the girl away. Innocent. Innocent.
I'm fucking innocent! What did I do?
The cluster offers shelter from corruption.
Blood flows freely from her nostrils, and she can't breathe through one side. Oh well. Less shit to smell in East Side. The cloaked orange eyes stare down at her, piercing through her blurred vision. They look like mechanical monsters. The girl sees a young judge with slicked back hair. He has her arm and is keeping her standing. He isn't harsh when he speaks, just plain.
I've got somewhere new you can stay. You're gonna have to work, but I won't hurt you. There's others like you in the cleft, tiny one. You'll see.
Maybe he isn't a liar,
she thought. The mechanical monsters push a stack of bills into the judge's chest.
We're done here, Judge.
He looks at her and down at the bills, turning his head away in shame and regret. The monster's eyes glow brighter orange and swallow her in their smooth capes.
White noise to cleanse the background and focus the apparatus. I am the apparatus. Pseudo 19, function of program. Reference, Shattered Cross. Authorization, Fragment Monochrome.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Echoes of Escheton. I love engaging with my listeners on Twitter at Echoes of Escheton and via email at echoesofescheton@gmail.com. So reach out and say hello. I'm also on the new Spotify for Podcasters app. Spotify for Podcasters offers new ways to interact on each episode I release with Q&As and polls that might influence the course of the show. It doesn't matter if you're a podcast creator or a listener, you have a voice in Echoes of Escheton. So download the Spotify for Podcasters app for iOS and Android today and try it out. If you'd like to help the show, you can leave a rating on your podcatcher of choice, like Spotify or Apple. It gives me feedback and helps other people find Echoes of Escheton. Until next time.